Hello and welcome back to another episode of In Time Crime. I'm your host, Robin Babayoko. How are you guys doing today on this wonderful Sunday morning? I hope everybody's having a wonderful Sunday. I'm having a great Sunday. It's a great Sunday for me. Happy birthday to everyone that's having a birthday today or within this week. Happy birthday to you. Yeah, we're still, what are we? We're Aries now. So happy birthday to all Aries out there. Today's date that we will be dealing with on End Time is June the 15th of 1933. And today I only have one story because I could only find one because it seemed like it was the most significant story for that date. And it is a kidnapping of a hare to a beer factory, like a brewery. Okay, so let us begin with today's true crime. So today we'll be talking about William Ham Jr., who was born September the 4th, 1893, and was 39 years old on the day of the incident. He was born in Minnesota and is the grandson to Theodore Ham, who was the founder of the Ham's Brewery in St. Paul. He is also the son of William Ham Sr., who took over the business once his father, Theodore, retired. Okay, so on the evening of June 15th, 1933, at 12:45 p.m., William Ham Jr. was heading home to have lunch with his mom. He was walking home because I guess she lives close by. And as he was walking, he was abducted by a gang called the Baker Carpus Gang. Basically, they put him in the back of a black sedan and put like a pillowcase over his head and told him to lay down on the floor. So they drove about 30 miles out near the Wisconsin border. And once they got there, there were other men that joined these men. And while Ham was in the car, they made him sign four notes that were basically asking for large sums of ransom money. So he chose, this is William I'm talking about, he chose his a vice president, like his partner at the brewery, William Dunn, to basically communicate with the kidnappers. Okay, after that, they took him to a house in Illinois and put him in a room that basically only had like a chair, a bed, and a table with a little lamp. And they told him that if he needed anything, they could call out to him. And if any of them come into the room to help him, he needs to look away. That way he can't see their faces. So, of course, like most kidnappings all the time, when you watch it on TV, you know, wherever you hear about kidnappings, all the time they're saying, don't call the police. In any situation where there's something going on, they're always like, don't call the police. Which, of course, in this situation, they insisted that the police not be contacted. And, of course, his mother, William's mother, she was adamant about them being in contact with the police. So, you know, she really wants to find her son. So, despite what they're saying, don't get the police involved. She still insisted on getting the police involved. So the police got involved and they wiretapped the phone that Dunn, the vice president, that is in contact with the kidnappers. They wiretapped his phone so that they could get some kind of location on these people. So the kidnappers called at around 5 p.m. that same day and they were demanding $100,000 of unmarked bills, of course. Doesn't always have to be unmarked. Okay. in 5s, 10s, and 20s, which in today's money comes up to $2.4 million. They demanded that and said to wait for further instruction. Okay, so the police was contacted, of course, within about 3 hours, the chief of police. And then at around 2 a.m., a taxi pulled up with a ransom note that they made William sign, and they gave it to Dunn, demanding the $100,000. And it reads, and I quote, "You know your boyfriend is out of circulation. You are to pay off $100,000 in a manner explained to you this afternoon. If you fail to comply with our demands, you will never see William Hamm Jr. again." End of quote. So, of course, after receiving that message, the family got to work. They were frantic, and they got to gathering up the money and basically setting up everything that needed to be set up for when they were ready to move on to the next step, whatever they wanted to do. Okay, so on Saturday at 9 a.m., Dunn received another phone call. And this call was from a L.J. Solvoiled, who basically told him what to do next, which was to drive along the Highway 61 and get a car that has no doors and the trunk lid is taken off, and drive over speed below 20 miles per hour. So along the route, he will see another car that will be flashing their headlights 5 times. And once he sees that, he's supposed to get out and then put the money on the side of the road. And once he does that, he's supposed to get back in the car and continue to drive. And then when he gets to Zenith City, he was supposed to get in a hotel, and then there he should just sit and wait for him. So, of course, he did all of that. You know, he followed their instructions to the T and got the hotel. And when he got there, he thought that Ham would have already been there waiting for him, because I'm pretty sure he's like, they saw me do it. So, yeah. But he was not there. So he decided to just wait, of course. And he was later joined by two other officers, two other detectives, St. Paul and Tierney. And they were all just sitting there and waiting. So on Sunday the next day, June 18th, 1933, the kidnappers told Ham that, hey, good news, buddy. They pay the ransom, so you're going home. So they blindfolded him, and the next day, so not Sunday, so like Monday, they dropped him off on the side of the highway. Okay, so once they dropped him off, they were like, stay put, you know, and let us run away. So they also said, and I quote, if you ever wanted anything, or they could do anything for, you know, if they could do anything for him, let them know. End of quote. Okay, so Ham stayed on the side of the road until he was sure that they were gone. And then he went to a nearby farm, where he, you know, asked to use their phone and called his family. Once he called his family, the chief of police then, you know, announced to the public that Ham is found and he's about to go pick him up in Wyoming. Well, you know, after something like this happens to somebody, you know, of course your whole mindset is going to change. The whole outlook that you had on the world before is going to change. If you were like a carefree person that was just running up and down, la 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 la, and then you just so happen to get kidnapped and, you know, held for ransom, you are going to have a little bit more fear of the outside world. You're not going to be as free in the mind. You're going to be a little bit more reserved and scared. So, of course, that's what happened to William. Basically, he is a celebrity because this is a famous beer company, so people know who he is. And he used to embrace that. Like, you know, he used to be like, yeah, I'm him. I'm William, the owner of the brewery. But now he's, after this ordeal, he kind of turned down, you know. He's like, doesn't really want to be in the spotlight. He kind of prefers to be more low key, which is understandable. It's so bad for him to the point where even at his house, he has like high security. Like anything that happens, you hear a dog barking, a pin fall. Go see what's going on with that pin over there. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. Like he was that scared. It even says that, you know, he was a guy that was like real spiffy and wore like his suits and stuff, you know, because I mean, he owns the company, so he's going to dress the part. But after the ordeal, he started to dress like his employees to basically blend in with them so that, you know, basically he just didn't want to stand out. He went from being a standout, you know, like, here I am, world, like I said, to just very introvert and scared. He's scared, y'all. And of course, after going to court, like they said for 3 years, he had to go to court to deal with, you know, the case. He basically kept living the moment over and over again. And it just was not a good feeling for him. So basically, what happened to him and what happened a few months later to a Edward Bremer, that was another kidnapping that happened a few months later, it basically caused for there to be an extreme demand to fight these gangsters. Like they're just out here doing what they want and receiving what they want, and it's not fair. So it really pushed for there to be a end to the era of these gangster people, like of these gangs. So the Daily News editor, Howard Kahn, basically he was fighting for something to be done about criminals that were just moving around the city unscathed, just committing crimes all willy-nilly, like I said. Like these gangs were just out here doing what they wanted to do without any repercussions. Right. So what Kahn was doing, you know, basically pushed for people to vote out corrupt people that were in the government and put people in place that were actually going to do something about these criminals. And it was working. You know, once they did this, the crime rate went like way below other states. Like it decreased by a lot. Like I said, because of what happened to Ham, it became the first time that the government decided to have a war on crime. Okay, so because Ham was taken from Minnesota into Wisconsin, that invoked the Lindbergh Law, which is, of course, even if you're kidnapped between states, you know, they can kind of still do what they got to do. I have to read a little bit better on that, but look up the Lindbergh Law. It has to do with basically taking someone from one state into another state, because you know how certain states can't do certain things based on their jurisdiction. But the Lindbergh Law kind of just puts that to the side. Like regardless of where you're taken, I guess something can still be done between both states or whatever the case may be. And it also, like I said, allowed for the federal investigators to get these perpetrators, because now they're free to take care of the matter regardless of where he was taken. So later on, with the invention of the silver nitrate method, they were able to garner fingerprints from the kidnappers. Okay, so of course, after they got those fingerprints, they, you know, they could get to work and start looking for these people. So it took a while, you know, it took a while. It wasn't until May the 1st of 1936 that they caught an Alvin Karpis, which was a part of the member, a member of the gang that kidnapped William. And he was arrested in New Orleans and sentenced to serve life in prison in Alcatraz. His arrest ended, let me quote it straight from this article. It ended the reign of criminals in the Depression era. So, of course, with his kidnappers being, you know, locked away, Ham feels a little bit better. He's a little lighter now. But it's said that he is always labeled as a kidnapped victim. Of course, you know, people gonna remember things forever and ever. But he still goes on to live a meaningful and successful life. Of course, they own a beer company. Money, 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 money. But yes, he lived a good life. So, yep, that is the end of the story of the kidnapping of William Ham Jr. on our date today, which is June 15th, 1933. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, join me next Sunday for another story or another true crime and another date in time. I appreciate you guys so much for listening. Have a wonderful afternoon.